From the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, this is KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Yeah. that's a way to start a show. Welcome to Lanyap. This is Cheryl Castile, and for the summer from Marcy LaCouture. And if you didn't hear Todd Mouton at the beginning of that song, that was Boss Klaus, and who I am thrilled to have in the studio today are members of that band. We have from left to my left to right, Jeff Thistlewaite, Donnie Piku, and Ted Cabina. So welcome, you guys.
Glad to be here.
It's great.
Great to be
yeah.
here.
Yeah, and if Miss Eula Cobina is out there listening, that song was for you, young lady.
All
so
right.
We hope you enjoyed it.
That's my mom.
And Ted, you did say that Boss Klaus is her favorite rock band.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's wonderful. You know, the way I kind of wanted to start today, because you guys, you know, you have a history. For those out there who aren't familiar with who Boss Klaus is. I mean, people that are Boss Klaus fans, you know, I didn't grow up here, but I've been here about 20 years now. So I missed when you guys all started out. However, over the years, it's really interesting to me that when you do meet people that are Boss Klaus fans, I mean, those are some of the most die-hard fans you ever wanted to meet. And so that's a lot how I have learned about you guys. But for the people out there that still don't know who you are, how would you describe the band and what Boss Klaus was, what it is?
Well, I don't know. It's always hard for me to describe, you know, I'm such in the middle of it, but it's just a original music rock band. We started out just trying to do what we wanted to do, and people liked it, so we kept doing it.
Yeah, and you know, when I think of your history, when you guys really started, I mean, it was a time when disco had really kind of taken over some of the, I mean, the live, you know, music clubs all over the place. And so were you guys kind of at that time, back in the late 70s maybe, were you guys kind of like a more of an underground kind of band, would you say?
Or we were deep underground for a while.
Yeah.
You know, with people trying to throw dirt on top of us, but, you know, we just very low. We just kept at it. You know, we believed in what we were doing, so we just kept going, and eventually people caught on, understood what we were doing, you know. And,
yeah, you were an original band member, Donnie.
Yes, yeah, I actually started the band.
And you're the main songwriter.
Yes.
All right. Had you played in bands prior to Boss Klaus?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. Starting when I was about 15 when I got my first guitar, and a few months later I was playing professionally, and just never stopped. Wasn't always out in the public, but always was writing and doing music. For a few years it was just traveling around with a guitar and a harmonica and playing in houses and stuff. So.
Now, you grew up in Eunice, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
In high school, that's when you...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You started in your first band in high school?
Right.
What was the name of the band?
The first name was The Missing Links.
Ah.
And then we went through several other name changes from there.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, including... We had, for about a day, we wanted to have a more British sound, so we were the Lords.
That
lasted till the next day when we told our peers in high school that. We're not calling you that.
Yeah. How about you, Jeff? What age were you, first band for you?
Oh, actually, the first band I was in was called the Amazing Captain Nasty Band.
And how old were you?
I don't know, 18.
Hail from Opelousas.
Uh-huh.
So
we used to play at Wilson's Bogeyland and outside of Eunice.
Wait, you used to play where?
Wilson's Bogeyland.
Where was that?
They misspelled boogie.
where was that?
Outside of Eunice, between Eunice and Crowley.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. We'd play there every Saturday night for almost of a summer.
What kind of...
Brother Duncan was in the band.
Ah, okay. Who else?
A guy named Ronnie Whitaker, who's from Shreveport. A guy named Jack Geyser, who now lives in Austin, Texas, but he was from, like, Singapore.
Ah, and rock and roll?
It was rock and roll.
Yeah.
We had a few originals, but it was mostly cover stuff, blues.
You got paid?
we still don't get paid.
Yeah, yeah. That depends on what you mean in payment. You know? We had the adulteration of hundreds of cockroaches.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was 10 people in a club, you know. What do you...
But at that age, who cared, you know?
Exactly.
You were playing.
You were on stage and playing.
That's
cared,
right.
You know?
And you were
making a bunch of loud noise.
You were doing bass back then?
Yeah.
Who was singing?
Jack mostly sang.
Okay.
Johnny Gautreaux was in the band for a while. He sang. Duncan never sang.
Okay. Duncan was on guitar?
Duncan guitar, yeah.
How about you, Tad? You grew up where?
Rain, Louisiana.
Oh, so you grew up in Rain, okay.
Oh, yes, born and raised there. And I actually started out on guitar. But I saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan that famous night. And when I saw Ringo sitting up there on that drum riser, I said, that's what I want to do.
Really?
Oh, that's, yes.
Wow.
I knew from that moment, and I still remember sitting there in front of the television.
Yeah. Well, what was it about that they grabbed you with him?
Well, he was up on a drum riser, yeah. And he was smiling the whole time. And yeah. I said, now that looks like a lot more fun than guitar.
Huh.
Because he got to hit things, too. He got to hit cymbals.
Because, I mean, you don't hear that a lot when you talk. You don't hear, you know, people usually are going for the guitar or something, you know. All right. So yeah. Ringo Starr.
Yeah. He was my first influence.
And was there already a drum kit around your house, or you had to go get one?
We had to search. My dad bought me a snare drum from Sears, and the local high school gave me one of their marching, 24-inch marching bass drums.
Yeah.
And so I set that up in the living room and just started banging away. And my neighbors would come over, and one guy came over with a guitar. And
how old were you about at that time?
14.
Okay.
Yeah. And we started a band, and we were lucky enough to have what was called the CYO, which I think stands for Catholic Youth Organization.
Okay, sure.
And they would hire bands every weekend, and there were several CYOs in the area, Generette, Iota. And so every weekend we'd go to a different CYO, and we were playing songs by the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Doing covers.
Yes.
Yeah.
But our lead singer wrote songs, and he told me way back then, it's not about doing other people's songs. He said, if you want to be a real musician, write your own music and go play your own music. Hmm. So after that group, I started looking for bands that played original music.
Okay.
And, you know, there was a fella from Rain that did that professionally, and I got to work with him. He moved, he's in Nashville now, but after that, I heard Boss Kloss, and I was like, whoa, those are good songs.
You'd already been in Red Beans and Rice by then.
Oh, thank you, yeah. Jeff. Yes, that's true. After I left Will Walker, I joined the Red Beans and Rice Review, which the main songwriter there was Mike Hennessy from Crowley.
Sure.
And I was with them for a while and really learned how to play other people's songs in a band context.
Yeah. You know, it's nice getting more of the history of the musicians from this area the last couple weeks. We had Danny Kimball on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that was great.
And then had Ward Lorman on last week. And it's nice hearing, you know, how everybody kind of intertwined at different times and different people came together, but then some of those, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I mean, you think about the talent that has come through this area, you know, musician-wise. So before we get back to Donnie, Jeff, so you're in that band with Duncan and the other folks. What took you to Boss Kloss? Well, what happened in between?
Well, in between there, I went to, being that I dropped out of college, and my mother was not real happy about it, me wasting their money, they said, you have to get a degree in something. So I went to trade school and got a degree in industrial electronics.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't graduate. I got the diploma because I finished all my requirements, but I wasn't there for graduation because I was on the road with Louisiana LaRue.
Ah.
As a sound engineer.
Yeah.
And modern engineer, guitar tech, driver, now, whatever.
Was that looked at in your family as being you got a real job? I mean, because that's a real job.
Well, it's a real job.
Yeah.
And it qualified on as a technicality, you know.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
And then when I was on tour with them, and during one of the breaks, I did I was in a musical. I was in a band. I was in the pit band for a musical, Godspell, that Donnie's brother was in. Donnie and him were playing at the Purple Peacock. And we had done rehearsals for the musical, and word came.
But the Purple Peak in Eunice.
In Eunice.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
Eunice,
yeah. Okay.
And the musical was in Eunice.
Uh-huh.
And Donnie's brother came to me one night when we finished rehearsal, said, man, my brother's band's playing, and my brother's amp blew up. Can he borrow your bass rig? So I brought my bass rig over to Purple Peacock and saw them, and I was like, hey, this guy writes.
Yeah.
Hey, because I was already on tour with LaRue, and I knew, like Ted's friend told him, I knew that if you wanted to go anywhere in the music business, you have to have your own songs.
Yeah.
So I was already looking for somebody who could actually write their own songs. Besides, I mean, I was on tour with LaRue, so I was seeing all these, what can happen if you actually can write your own songs.
Oh, yeah. At that time, LaRue toured. Did you tour around the United States, outside of the States?
All in the U.S.
Okay.
I didn't leave the States until I was touring with the Mama Playboys.
Okay.
Much later.
Yeah, much later than that.
Yeah.
So when you first saw Donningham, how old about were you?
Yeah, I was, what, 78?
Old enough to know
better. Oh, so you were still,
yeah,
okay. Still in your early
20s. I'd already
20s.
Been to college.
Yeah, but you're still in your early 20s at that point.
Oh,
1978.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're still
young. Yeah, it was
young.
Early on.
Okay.
And I kept right calling Donnie from the road. I'd be out, be on tour with Bob Seger and LaRue, and I'd call Donnie. You need a bass player yet? Because I was watching Donnie play bass. I knew he was a guitar player, not a bass player.
Yeah.
And then one day, finally, he said, yeah, we could use a bass player.
And what a happy day for you, huh?
Yeah. So I left LaRue and
I'll tail it back. Yeah. Donnie, when you were a teenager, were there songwriters at that? I mean, at that time, did you? I guess I'm wondering how you got like the whole concept of being a songwriter. Well, did writing come in another form prior to that?
Yes, I was dabbling in writing, starting probably in about the seventh grade. I started writing little short stories and poetry and stuff like that.
Okay.
There was people at the school that had actually encouraged us to be a little more creative. So
yeah.
So I'd done a lot of that, and then when started the first band or joined the first band with that my friend Bob Rivera started, we were high school classmates.
Oh, God, okay.
So,
wow.
He actually wrote a song, and I was like, God, that's pretty cool. So I started trying to turn what I was, coming up with the lyrics into lyrics and songs. And plus, it was really good. We were motivated to write our own songs because we were in no way good enough to play the songs off the records.
Yeah.
So, the only way we were going to play music and have enough music to play a full night was to make up our own, because nobody could really say, you don't sound like something.
Sure,
hey, you never heard this song.
Who would know? So when you first started writing, your lyrics came first?
It's always been just
back and forth.
There's no one particular way. Sometimes I'll get a melody idea, a chord change. Sometimes it's a thought about an idea that I want to turn into a song. Sometimes it might be, more of a poetic rhyming lines that come to me, whatever. But it's all different.
Yeah.
There's no one way.
What songwriters that you remember caught your ear back then? Or you thought, oh, my God, that's really something, what they're doing.
Oh, there's just a ton of them from back then, starting with, of course, the Beatles. But I also, would really listen to people like Burt Bacharach and stuff,
too,
just because they did so much interesting stuff with the melodies, too, and the chords behind the melodies, so that it wasn't just all pop stuff that I listened to, because we had a lot of music in our family, so my parents listened to a lot of music before we got old enough to start buying our own records and bringing them home. So we were exposed to everything. My parents had a real eclectic taste. They would listen to old blues records, Jimmy Reed and stuff, and they would listen to, Ray Charles, and my dad was a trumpet player, so they listened to big band stuff.
Yeah.
Glenn Miller and all that kind of music was always around.
Did he play while you guys were growing up? Was he?
No, he had pretty much quit playing by the time we came around. He played prior to World War II. He was really playing a lot, and then after that,
like playing in bands, like for dances and stuff.
He played a lot of bands. Yeah. His father had a nightclub, and so he would play sometimes in the club band and fill in for famous musicians that were too drunk to play.
Where was the club at?
It was right outside Eunice on the west side. you know, about where the Eunice Golf Course is, a little bit past there.
So the building, yeah, the building's gone now and everything.
Probably so. It was, the building was still there for years, and yeah, eventually it got torn down. There was a tire place out there for a while. I don't know what's there.
Do you remember the name of that club?
Oh, yeah, it was Barrows, B-E-R-R-O.
Barrows,
his name was Albert, or Albert was my grandfather's name, so his nickname was Barrow.
Ah, okay, all right.
So it was Barrows Club, and he had people like Harry James and the Ink Spots and Louis Armstrong. And
oh, how wonderful.
All these people come out to play the club.
And Donnie's the only musician I know that has met both Louis Armstrong and Jimi Hendrix.
Seriously?
Yeah, well, I remember Jimi Hendrix. I don't remember. I was. My mother was carrying me. Well,
yeah,
in
when
her
you
arms,
met.
Not in her bed.
Yeah, but that counts, right?
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, nobody thought to take a picture. Man, you can imagine if I'd had a picture of myself as a little tiny baby being held by Louis Armstrong.
That's right.
Meeting Jimi Hendrix years later. You know?
Yeah.
Now, where'd you meet Jimi Hendrix at?
In Baton Rouge.
Okay.
You know, this was back in the day before they had all the security they have now.
That's right.
Pop stars and rock stars, but
it was a lot different.
Just a bunch of us. We're pretty young, old enough to drive, but not much older. But
you know, it's interesting though what you're talking about, the people that came through, you know, with your grandpa's club. It comes up quite a bit, especially in that St. Landry Parish area. All the clubs, I mean, and all the performers, mm-hmm. big name folks, all kinds of music that came through, you know, that area. Now, I wasn't aware of that club.
Yeah, back in, that was right on Highway 190, and that's pre-interstate days, so Highway 190 was the main artery between, you know, like places
Houston,
in Texas and New Orleans.
Yeah.
So it was a kind of a natural stopover point because all these bands traveled around in, you know, cars and buses and stuff, so it made the trip from Houston to New Orleans easier for them back in those days.
That's right.
It took a lot longer to make that trip back then with all the towns and red lights you had to deal with. But it was perfect locations.
I mean, so performing is, I mean, that's in your blood. You know, music and performing, that's in your blood.
Yeah, actually the first instrument that I played was trumpet when I was probably about 12 or 13. One Christmas, my dad gave me a trumpet for Christmas, and my brother Mike, who's next in line from me there, is about a year difference. So he bought him a set of drums.
Okay.
So
now, who were you talking about with the theater, Jeff, of his brother that you said
that was Mike?
That was Mike.
Mike was the main character in Godspell.
Ah, okay. All right. Okay. And then Steve is the younger.
Steve's his little brother.
Yeah, that's the little brother.
Yeah, he basically, I was telling people the other night, we were talking about the beginnings of the band, or the beginnings of Boss Class, and when I was trying to start a band, Steve was calling me and, you know, just saying, you gotta let me in the band, you gotta let me in the band. But
as a younger brother would.
He was just getting out of high school, and I never wanted anybody to follow in my path, whether it's family, friends, or people that barely know me. I do not encourage that.
You
probably don't want to do this. And of course, being family, I didn't want to bear the responsibility of, you know, ruining my youngest brother's life.
Donnie.
Yeah.
Despite your best efforts there, Donnie, he's actually sane and stuff, you know?
That's right. Yeah. So, Jeff, you joined the band before Ted.
No, we joined the band together.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Gary Grafe was in the band.
Okay.
And there's two guys in Baton Rouge, Pat Bowers and
Pat Grimion.
Pat Grimion and Buddy Bowers were in the band, and they left. And they were, because they were kind of commute from Baton Rouge. And
now, was that before Gary was in the band
the
that did like that did Opelousa Soul Stand Up?
That was after that.
That was after that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I was actually in that band for a little while. Yeah.
Oh, you were?
Rufus Jadno.
Yeah, in some strange configuration of that.
Were you in the band during that whole Opelousa Soul Stand?
No, Benny took me and my friend Bobby under his wing and was producing us at Floyd's for a while.
Okay.
And Benny, Gary, and Mike Benet on drums became the backup band for Bob and I's original music. But then Benny would also get bands. At that time, he was kind of, I forgot what he was called, it was kind of like Rufus Jagno and the Old Boy So Stand Band.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
Jungle
Rap.
Yeah.
So it was one of those incarnations of that band. So we would play in that band when it would be a gig for that. They would back us up when it was a gig for me and Bobby, but all of us would also did some gigs as the backup band for Nancy Tabb and Markintail also.
Okay.
So, but we played Gary. I met Gary during that time, and then I got him talked into joining Boss Class for a while, and he was a good addition. He was another songwriter.
Sure.
And at that time,
keyboards.
Everybody was multi-instrumentalists. Steve, the guy Pat Grimion that Jeff mentioned, myself, and Gary all played keyboards, guitar, harmonica.
Okay, yeah.
So depending on the song's needs, we would just rotate around.
Yeah.
Bass.
So how did these guys, these two come in together? Ted and Jeff.
How'd you find Ted?
I know
you found me because I warded you to Ted.
But no, Jeff, did you know Ted prior?
Uh-uh. No.
Oh, you didn't? Uh-uh. Oh, you guys didn't know each other.
No,
okay.
But yeah, they kind of came in simultaneously because, you know, with the departure of two of the members of the band, we had a week to replace those two people because we were doing a pilot TV program that was being filmed at the Kingfish in Baton Rouge.
Mm.
And we didn't want to cancel that because that was a pretty good gig.
Yeah,
good
paid.
Gig at Kingfish Plus being a pilot TV show.
Sure.
Of live music. And actually, my cousin Skip and Mike Stagg, our friend.
Yeah.
Dragged Ted into this. they told him all kind of stories.
Actually, one night I was just jamming at a friend's house, and Gary Grafe was there, and so I met Gary, and Gary tells the story. He'll pat me on the back and say, "Ted, I'm the one that recommended the band." So it's Gary's fault.
So that's the lineup that has remained since.
Yeah, I think that's when the band really. I think that's when the band.
Well,
really
Ted
came.
Left for a little bit,
right,
but
yeah.
came.
Yeah,
but
right.
you're back now, so.
Right, but when Jeff and Ted joined the band, I think that's when we really found our true direction.
Yeah,
we were kind of trying different styles out and working with different things for a while. I spent a time trying to make my songs, arrange them, and play them in a way that kind of fit. What was going on at the time, which was kind of like a country rock kind of thing.
The first single with Jason and Mad Dog and All of Your Mind sounds like almost like a Grateful Dead tune, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But and actually, you know, we were playing the same beats that everybody was dancing to at the time, and the same. But most of the bands weren't really playing all original or as much original as we were playing. They were playing a lot of Willie Nelson and Jerry Jeff or whatever, Grateful Dead or whatever. So even though we were giving them, I figured, if we give them the right dance beat, you know.
Then get away with anything.
Then we get them up on the dance floor, and then, you know, we got them.
You know,
but they would just look at us and, you know, nah. So when these guys joined, we just really started saying, let's just do them the way we really feel like they should be done.
Yeah.
And then we'll feel happier about not being liked. Because we'll be doing what we really want to do.
That always makes a difference.
It does, yes.
You know, you guys brought in some cuts of some things that you're working on right now.
Well, this isn't out of the studio that we just did. This is cuts from Medicine Show and gig at the Blue Moon in 2008. I think.
Okay. Well, pick one out that we can listen to, that Cecil can put on, so we can kind of hear
track
where.
Six, Cecil. Silverbird.
Before Cecil gets that going, tell me the history of that song. Who wrote it?
Well, yes.
Relatively.
Yeah, I wrote that one. Steve was talking about it. I was kind of glad to hear him talking about it the way he did, because I like it when people talk about a song and I know that they really got it. But the character that's singing the song is really crazy. I mean, he's really crazy. He's lost someone, and he's being totally irrational. He's not looking at the real reality of why he lost that person and why he's not getting them back. He's blaming it on basically, you know, inanimate objects or semi-animate objects or so, you know.
Yeah.
So, but it's just a song about, you know, losing someone and the desire to get them back.
Okay. Now, has this been on a CD yet or anything?
Nothing. This is unreleased.
Okay, unreleased. Yeah. Okay, and it's called?
Only been released when we played it live from the stage.
Okay, it's called Silver Bird. Don't you go away.
Okay, that was Silver Bird, written by Donnie Piku. Jeff, jump in and tell us about who all was on that.
That was recorded at Medicine Show 2002. And when the people of Medicine Show asked us to have a reunion, the first reunion we had since 91, I told the guys, I said, look.
Yeah, so wait, 2002, last time was 91. Okay.
We broke up in 91.
Okay.
I moved back to Louisiana. Donnie stayed in Atlanta. Steve moved to New Orleans, you know, so we were kind of separated. And in 2002, they asked us to have a reunion and come play Medicine Show, which we were honored to do. We all knew Tommy. But I told the guys that I don't want to go. I'm not going on stage unless we have a B3 on stage with us. And they said, "Yeah, good idea."
Now, why was that important to you?
Because it just, I always thought the band should sound like that. You know, it was always two guitars, bass, and drums before, and it was always very nervous and very, you know, jangly guitars. And I wanted to hear, I heard it in my head with a B3.
Yeah.
You know, the songs that Donnie wrote, I heard them with a B3 in my head. So then I had to go find a B3 player. And I asked around, One night I asked CeCe Adcock, dude, I got to find a B3 player. And he's like, he's kind of looked at me like, you're an idiot, you know, like, what about Eric? And I was like, one of those slap your head, forehead moments. Oh, yeah, what? Right in front of my face. So Eric Adcock played B3. And the horn is Dickie Landry, whom you couldn't keep away from the stage unless you tied him up with chains. You know?
Yeah.
Who, you know, we love Dickie.
And if you're just joining us, this is Lon Yapin, and it's Cheryl Castellan for The Summer from Marcy, and this is on 88.7 FM KRVS, krvs.org. It's a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. And again, remember, you can go to the website if you'd like to listen to some of the shows you missed through the podcast, and it's also a great way to support the station. You can give right on that website, and it's a secure site. So check it out, krvs.org. If you're just joining us in the studio today, because they are in town doing some playing and doing some recording, we have three of the members of Boss Class. We've got Jeff Thisawaite, Donnie Piku, and Ted Cobina. So Donnie, that was a song you wrote.
Yes.
Okay. You talked too during a lot of this time. You throughout the years you've been playing as a solo act too.
Yeah, I do that now, you know, since we're not all together in the same state or town.
Yeah. Now, you're back in Atlanta.
I'm in Atlanta, yes.
Do you have any bands that you play in there, or is it mostly solo?
Most of the work I do there is solo. I've over the years, I've played with a few people off and on, but primarily most of what I do now in Atlanta is solo, because it's just too hard to try to put a band together.
Sure.
The quality of musicians I'd like to play with, I kind of have to have a way to pay them. So
yeah.
That's always been the sticking point.
unless it's
Boss Class.
Had to worry about paying them.
You know, I still have the carrot on the stick with them. They're still chasing that. So.
Yeah.
I painted green one day, and they think it's a new carrot. So.
Well, as you're writing songs, are there some that, you know, as they're coming together that you just hear, God, this would be a great one to try out with a band?
Definitely, yeah. Just about everything I do, I know that I could do with Boss Class.
Okay.
You know, there's no song that I would say, you know, I would want to, you know, perform with other people. I mean, of course, if they're not all around, then I might bring in other people. I've been dabbling with some recording in Atlanta at a friend's studio, and playing with some other people there. But yeah, every song I've ever written, I'll always say, I wonder what it would sound like done by Boss Class. You know, even a ballad, you know, whatever it may be. We've actually tried to play ballads or slower songs over the years during our heyday of Monday Night Madness and stuff, but it was fun for us to do, but for some reason our audience, if it wasn't something they could bounce off the walls while we were playing, that was like their time to go outside and take a break, get out of the heat of the club. You know, they'd hear us rocking again, they'd come back in, we're like, we just quit playing those live. But we've worked on other material that we don't play live.
Donnie's written a lot of songs that we don't, that Boss Class doesn't play as a band on stage because it didn't fit what we do on stage. He's got a whole bunch of songs that, you know, other people should do.
when you guys know, what brought you together this time to record? What was it? What was the impetus at Boy Lutz?
Well, we, you know, since Medicine Show, really, that's what I've been trying to tell everybody, and we've been talking about. We've only had one reunion. That was the Medicine Show. That was a reunion.
Okay.
Now we're working together. We're collaborating together. We're playing when we can. Like, again, we live in three different states.
Yeah.
So it's not as easy as if we were all here. We can't play as often. But
and
we're
Ted,
doing...
excuse me, I'll say, you're in Florida.
Florida,
yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So we look at these as just, it's a gig, you know, we're together and we're playing gigs and recording and this opportunity to work with a friend, Steve Nails out at Dockside came up and we actually stayed, he actually let us stay at his guest house out there on the property when we came in for Festival International.
Okay.
So, and, you know, we were just talking, and we're talking about we wanted, he was asking why. We played, actually, Blue Moon, which was the kickoff party for Fest. We didn't play on any of the main stages or any of the stages. And he was just asking why weren't we playing there? And I was saying, well, basically, I think we got to get him a recording, a fresh recording.
That's
like,
right.
You know, we can't give them a recording from 1982 and say we want to play Festival International.
That's right,
you know,
yeah.
It's like they want to see the bands they're hiring is living, active entities. And
yeah.
So, we, you know, that's the package we got to put together. And so he said, well, why don't y'all do something here? And so we worked things out where we could all come together and do this. So we've been planning it since then. And that was the main, you know, impetus for getting this going, but really we want to do more than that. You know, we'd like to make it an official release. We've got 12 songs.
That's 12
already.
Tracked.
Yeah.
Tracked already. Steve, that's why Steve's not here now.
When did you start recording? What day?
Saturday.
Okay, so you got 12 tracked already?
Yeah.
Bass and drum and rhythm guitar.
Yeah.
See, Steve, if he's hopefully not listening to us on the radio right now.
Which
and
he should be working.
He should be working. He should be in the studio working right
hard,
now.
Hard.
Yeah.
Get those leads done. Get them down because we still have to track. You know,
and we're talking about Steve Pico.
Yeah. We need. We have other things to do too. We have other people, guests, musicians that will be tracking also. We need time to do that and mix. So we have a lot of work to do.
So all new songs from what?
It's a mix of stuff, new songs, some older material that we never really had a chance to do in a studio, or, you know, we might have recordings of them, but they're not the best quality and stuff. So we're stuff that we still see as fresh and good for us to do now.
Yeah.
We've been together, what, 33, 35 years, something like that. And we did go in the studio once and try and make a record, and we were not happy with the results that we got out of it. So we got a lot of recorded all our rehearsals, recorded a lot of our gigs, but nothing that we would release. So this is the first time we actually record something that can be released.
Yeah. I'm curious, when you all come together now, whoever's writing the songs, you're doing most of it, Donnie, and Steve, your brother's doing a bit of writing?
He did some in the past. He hasn't been writing much.
But these are mostly
stuff.
All your stuff.
Yeah, this is.
Yeah. So when the band comes together, though, is there ideas being thrown in from all the different band members? Like, how is this going to... Can I try this? Can we...
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the beautiful things about having the time to work at Dockside Studio. We're it's real relaxed. It's beautiful out there. The creative vibes are just flowing.
Yeah.
And Donnie's got some of these newer songs. I really didn't have a drum part that I was totally happy with, and he made suggestions. Jeff made suggestions, and
none of us in this band. It's kind of a good thing. Maybe that's why we lasted so long. None of us sit on a. You know, we all help each other out.
Yes.
You know, it's very supportive. You know, Donnie's gives us all real freedom to, you know, come up with our own parts and stuff. He doesn't sit there, well, it has to be played like this, you know. He'll let you do whatever you want to do, and we'll see what comes, you know.
And then fine-tune it later.
Yeah.
And
everybody has input in whichever your part is, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you send Donnie CDs out to everybody before people got here? I mean, is that how... Or files or whatever.
Well, actually, yeah, we all have a pretty good library of work over the years. So, you know, we starting out when we did the Got Together for Medicine show, we started making sure people had copies of the stuff that we were going to do for the show. And then as we rehearsed for that show, we were recording those. And so everybody over these past several years definitely has that. And in the newer songs, we've been doing what I call long-distance recording. We did that for a while, where I would record on a digital recorder at home and burn it to a CD, send it to Ted. He had the same kind of recorder. He would load it up, put drum tracks on, and either send it back to me or on to Jeff to do the same thing, load it up, put his parts on. But in the digital age, it doesn't lose any quality when you
That's
do that.
Right.
So it's as good or bad as it was when it started.
It's a long process doing that. It takes forever.
But think about how great it is now, though, when you have the digital. I mean, you know,
That's
you just
great.
Put it on a file and, you know, email it off, send it off, however you do it, upload it, you know. Can we pick out one more here to listen to?
How about one from That is true.
All right. And we're going to, because we've got two left.
Yeah, back. Oh, we have two left.
Yeah. Let's pick one off of here.
Oh, let's do Ramona.
Okay. That is going to be track number 9, Cecil. Tell us about that song, Donnie.
Let's see, what is that?
My wife asked him that same question last night.
And what was the response?
Well, Donnie had the perfect, my wife left smiling. She understands what Ramona.
I remember what I said.
And can you say it on the radio?
Oh, yeah. I think I can. What did I say?
That was a good.
Which quote me?
Can you fill in the blanks?
I have
here,
studio
Ted?
Brain, you know. Wake up in a fog.
Donnie explained that it's someone chasing an elusive dream or an elusive idea, and you keep looking for proof, but it's elusive.
Yeah.
And I had explained to my wife it's about love.
Yeah.
You know, trying to describe the feeling of love.
Yeah.
And she said, well, yeah, Ramona starts with R-O-M, just like romance. And Donnie said, I didn't think of that.
Actually, I usually don't say I didn't think of that. When people say stuff that I didn't think of, I was like, yeah.
That's exactly what I was
saying. You're right on it.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen, and then we'll all come up with what we think it came with. This is Ramona. Was Ramona, also written by Donnie Piku. So that's everybody's assignment for the week out there, is to figure out where that song came from. You know, how that song
got
written.
Well, Jeff told about why I wrote it the last night, too.
Yeah. We were living in Atlanta, and there was six of us living in a two-bedroom apartment, or bungalow
house.
Now,
when you were in Atlanta, was that to play, or because I mean,
we moved there in '86.
Yeah.
The economy went to ground around here, so we moved to Atlanta seeking fame and fortune.
Okay,
and Well, one night I was real frustrated with Donnie. I don't know why. I was frustrated in general. You know, we're beating our head against the music.
Yeah, we got to have some dirt here. You guys, you can't always get along. That's
well, I told him, I said, what? You can't just write a love song. Just write a love song. Come on, just a song about love. So he comes back the next week with this thing.
Ah.
And he's looking at me the whole time. He's showing it to me like, don't tell me what to write.
Yeah.
Because I'll come back and play a song all about love without the word love in it anywhere, okay?
Yeah, in your face with that one.
In your face, dude.
I feel one. How's it going in the studio so far? How do you feel about what's going on this week?
I feel great.
No, man, it's fun.
We've got one of the best engineers on the planet.
Now, who's engineering it?
David
Farrell.
David Farrell.
Yeah, okay.
And he engineered our single, second mm-hmm. single.
So it's somebody you also have a lot of history with, yeah.
That was back in 80, right?
82-something.
Surfing USA, back with Physical World.
S-E-R-F.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that was the first single I played on with you guys.
Yeah.
And that was done in a studio in the country. So when this thing came up, Dockside, David was there, and so he was available, so we have history with this guy. Let's go.
Yeah.
So, and we're having a blast. And this is a lifelong dream for me. I mean, I wanted to do this back before I was even in this band. When I was touring with LaRue, and when I was in the studio with them and the Dirt Band and all the things, like, I always sat there while they all got to do all the things. And I was, boy, one day I'll get in the ghost studio with my band.
Yeah.
Fast forward, 40 years later?
Never give up.
You know what's so fun, though, Jeff, when I think, what people are doing in their lives, because so many people in terms of music know you being behind the board.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time and then I've heard other people talk about the same experience seeing you on stage with these guys, and it's like, well, and who knew Jeff this way could do the splits, number one, in the air. But I mean, that it's a really nice treat sometimes. I mean, it's frustrating for you guys when you don't get to play a lot, but when people don't see you for a long time.
Yeah, like the younger musicians don't even know that, like Chris Stafford and all the younger guys.
They didn't even know
guys.
Your they history with playing.
Yeah, I was doing sound for Chris and them when they were like, the accordion was bigger than Chris back then, but now they're all grown up and they still didn't know I could play until one day Chris showed up and we played Blue Moon a few years back, and Chris was like, oh, I didn't know you did that.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a fun thing to see. Ted, in Florida, are you doing anything music-wise there?
That's what I do in Florida. The area that I live in has several resorts that hire bands for daytime, nighttime events, and there's several clubs there too. That there's a blues band that I work with on a regular basis, and a couple of people from Louisiana will pass through, and I'll sit in and play with them. So
yeah.
I play as much as
And you record bands too. You have a little studio.
I've got a small project studio at home, and people can come in and do demos. A couple of them have come in, and we've taken the CD all the way to being pressed and distributed. I'm active musically in Florida.
Yeah.
But I sure love coming back to Louisiana.
and playing with these guys.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like Jeff said, this is a dream come true.
So what's the time frame? We've got a couple minutes left here. What's the time frame for this release? Do you kind of have one?
No.
No?
We're winging it.
Yeah.
We're winging it.
Yeah. We want to get it done as quickly as we can, but we want to do it right. We've done projects before where the main goal was doing it as quickly as you can.
And
we're always not satisfied with the end result. But, we do want to have something fresh to present to the committee to get on the Festivals International. We'd love to play out
on
the stage.
Let's get Boss Klaus here, huh? We could start a whole lot.
Yeah.
All right.
Call your local representative of Festival International and
Cecil.
Say, we want Boss Klaus.
Cecil in the other room. No pressure. You guys, for people who didn't have a chance to go last Friday, and, for people who have not seen Boss Klaus before, you have a wonderful opportunity this Saturday to head out here in Lafayette to the Wild Salmon, which is just a great joint. and a good pool table, I'll say, too.
Yeah,
while the band's getting ready, you can shoot some pool. But that's this Saturday. Band is going about 9:30.
Yep.
And that's on Foreman Drive, right behind Lafayette High School.
Right.
And the guy that owns the place, too, what's his name?
Steve Dimmick.
Yeah. Heck of a nice guy.
Real nice. He's an old friend of ours.
Yeah.
Back in the, I guess I can tell that story about X.
Some of it.
Well, you have like a minute.
Some of the, well, we would bring people back in the 80s, they thought we were a punk band, so we were going, no, we're not a punk. Wait, you want to see a punk band? Wait a minute. So we brought X to town.
Ah.
And.
You did?
Yes.
Where'd they play at?
At the, what's now called Night Town, but back then it was called the Downtown Chateau.
Ah, okay.
Had a disco, lighted disco dance floor and orange shag carpet on everything.
Yeah.
It was great. It was cool. And but Dimmick put the money up for us to do that.
Okay.
And he lost a lot of it too.
Yeah. But I mean, has always been a supporter.
Yes.
And so if you get a chance, go out this Saturday night to Wild Salmon at 9:30 to see Boss Kloss. Boss Kloss also played, which has been coming up again, Jeff, is your family would put together those yam jams and
Opelousas.
They were
showing up on Facebook.
Duncan's been posting festival time.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Duncan put one of those festivals up, and there's a couple of good stories about that particular one. That was the one the Meters played, and Boss Kloss opened up.
I mean, you guys pulled in all kinds of people to those things.
Oh, yeah. Clifton Chenier headlined one, LaRue headlined, Greg Wright headlined, the Meters, who were just absolutely, he was mind-boggling how good they were. That when I went to purchase the advertising on the radio at K94 when back in those days, and the DJ at the time told me, I asked him, I said, look, here, you know, I'm buying ads for this concert. Can you put it on concert calendar? And he was like, really? No, we don't put local bands on our concert calendar. I said, wait a minute. The Meters just got home from opening up for the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
That's national.
That's So. Well, it's been fun reading about those. Well, you guys, it's been great having you on here today. I know there are how many shows left of stories, but I know there's a lot of people out there excited that
you'll have to come see us to get them all.
That's right.
Yeah. And if you ever do a late night show, we could tell some other ones too.
Yeah.
So.
And then Ted can always repeat them the next time when you don't remember what
they're right.
All right. So it's been Jeff Thistlewaite, Donnie Piku, and Ted Covina with Boss Kloss, and Steve Piku is working today in the studio for the release that'll be coming out. That's right. We're going to go out with another song that was on the Medicine Ball.
Medicine Show.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of your show, Cecil, that was on the Medicine Show release, and that was Back to Work. Have a good week, everybody.
Thank you.
This program is sponsored in part by Acadiana365.com, the Independent's monster online events calendar, providing thousands of events from dozens of organizations with updates 24/7. Whether looking for something to do or registering an event, the website is...